Chapter 2. Divisions. His name had been Tok Derinoth. He still accepted the syllables as a designation of his physical presence, but they were no longer the sum of his being. He had once marched in the third hand of the word-bearers, but he had transcended that role. He had once served the chaplain Kurtha Sed. He had transcended that role too. He had become the greater truth of the word. He was two, and he was one. He had cast away limits of flesh and the lies of old existence. He was unburdened. He had resisted the coming of his transformation. In the profound depths of Kalth, Kurtha Sed had brought the gift upon him, and he had struggled to hold on to his trivial humanity. He had sinned against the word. He had spurned the will of the gods. And so there had been penance. He was unburdened, yet he was imprisoned. He sat in the command throne of the battle barge De Profundis. Psychic and physical chains bound him there. His nerves and the power conduits of the ship were one. Throughout the halls and chambers of the vessel, a ritual was proceeding, binding his being and the ship's more and more tightly. He welcomed the duty of his chains because they presaged his bloody redemption. They were an agony as sublime as his transformation. Arrogance and selfish designs had in the end doomed Kurtha Sed, who had sought his own transformation too late. Tok Derinoth had learned obedience. He had learned to submit to goals greater than his own, and he had been rewarded. A being had come to him on Kalth. It called itself a celebrant of undivision. It took him from Kalth. It brought him to the De Profundis to take part in a great hunt. When the ritual was complete, he would be unleashed upon the prey. Not long. Not long. His jaws parted in the long, slavering smile of truth.
"We're losing formation coherence,"
said Verus Caspian, chapter master of the First.
"So soon?"
Gilliman kept the frustration from his face. This jump was even shorter than the last, and the storm was about to force his squadron back into real space. The strategium of the Samothrace could be sealed off from the bridge, and its distractions of moment-to-moment demands. The doors were closed now, turning the chamber into a sanctuary of war governance. Here the theoretical was tested. From here the practical issued. The dome of the strategium was lower than that of the bridge, the darkness of its stone illuminated by a hololithic projection of the regional star chart. The relative closeness of the walls and the constant presence of the immediate battlefield focused the mind. The star chart was a complete blank during the transition through the warp. That was the one note of grace as the operation continued to break down. Gilliman took in the essentials of the onrushing, overlapping reports. The hololiths on the tacticarium table were a patchwork of approximations, guesses, and darkness. It mocked Gilliman. It was the evidence of his campaign's theoretical devolving into a pointless exercise, one that no practical could salvage. He had divided his fleet into strike forces, each powerful enough to annihilate a system. He had ordered tight formations. If the warp storms pulled the ships away from each other, their jump was to cease, and the strike force reassemble before a new attempt was made. The wrenching apart was already occurring, and Gilliman's cohort had barely started this jump. The deck heaved as the Samothrace ploughed through the storm. The Ultramarines' officers, gathered in the strategium, did not shift with the motion. They were solid as marble columns. From the corner of his eye, Gilliman saw a ripple crawl down one side of the doorway. The materiality of the ship was less stable than his son's.
"Theoretical,"
said Titus Prato, speaking over the droning vox speakers, solemnly announcing the formation's disintegration.
"The increased resistance is evidence that this route is the correct one."
"An inviting theoretical," Gilliman told the librarian. "One dangerously close to wishful thinking."
Prato nodded once.
"Admittedly so. And we have no choice but to verify it," Gilliman said. "Shipmaster," he voxed Teresia Altuza, "end the jump."
"So ordered, my lord."
Deep in its core, the Samothrace shuddered. The tremor swept along the length of the ship. It passed under Gilliman's feet. He grimaced in sympathy for the great vessel's pain. A moment later, there was a change in the air, a more assured reality. They had returned to the Materium. After a series of flickers, the star chart appeared in the vault again. Gilliman glanced up.
"Apologies," Prato said. "That was wishful thinking."
The stars were a scattered few. There was even more cogitator extrapolation than with the fleet positions. The ruin storm made even the most basic navigational measurements uncertain. Entire star systems, even ones that were theoretically in the near vicinity, were as invisible as Terra. There was still enough data for Gilliman to see the strike force's position. The Samothrace and its escorts were on the northwestern fringe of Ultramar, a bare few light years from their previous position. They had moved laterally along the border. If there had been any progress towards Terra, it was well disguised. The nearest system was Anuari, and it was on the western edge of the chart, hardly close enough to register. The strike force had emerged in the deep void.
"We're scattered," said Dracus Gorod, commander of the Suzerain Invictus bodyguards.
The Tacticarium table blinked and rearranged its runes to reflect the new positions of the strike force. The ships had been thrown like a handful of bones across the region. Only the strike cruiser Cavascor was still attending the Samothrace.
"Your theoretical may well be worth pursuing," Gilliman said to Prato.
He tried to push away the suspicion he was grasping at straws. Self-doubt had become an unwelcome, frequent companion. He had believed he had thought through all the possible consequences of Imperium Secundus. He had included, at its very inception, the contingency that his father was still on the throne of Terra. He worried that had been lip service to something he had not really believed was possible. If he had thought there truly was a chance that Horus had not conquered Terra, he wondered if he would have made the crime of Imperium Secundus a reality. He didn't know. The Imperium Secundus had been a practical in response to a theoretical whose foundations he could not trust. Prato's idea engaged with active conditions and proposed a possible course of action. The search for a way forwards had failed so far. The signals from the other strike forces were becoming more broken and erratic, and they were no closer to finding the path to Terra.
"We regroup," Gilliman said, "and then we make another attempt following the last route."
"And the other strike forces?"
Gilliman scanned the parchments, chattering out of servo skulls hovering over the table. They were transcriptions of astropathic communications arriving from the other battle group. They were more and more vague. The distances were taking their toll. The ruin storm was becoming a wall between his ships. He had gone as far as he dared down this path.
"Signal them," he said, "and we'll gather the fleet and start the search again, spreading outwards from this position."
The Tacticarium table blinked.
Contact, said Caspian. "Not ours."
"Analysis and theoreticals now," Gilliman ordered. "Doors open."
The Strategium opened up to the bridge. Gilliman strode through the doors while they were still grinding apart. The primary oculus revealed the ruin storm in full anger. Searing vortices and uncolours exploded in the dark. There were no stars. The void screamed, and in the insanity, to the fore of the ship, other vessels were closing.
"I want energy signatures and I want identities," Gilliman said. "Shipmaster, set an attack vector. Communications, get me Chapter Master Iasis."
One step behind him, Prato said,
"This cannot be a coincidence."
"It isn't," Gilliman agreed. "It's an ambush."
"The alert has been sent to all ships," Althusser said, anticipating his order.
"If we rush the enemy with only two ships," Prato began.
Gilliman cut him off.
"Theoretical. If it's an ambush, our retreat will already be accounted for. Practical. Disrupt the enemy formation with maximum aggression."
"We have Chapter Master Iasis,"
said Junixa Terrans, the Vox officer. Gilliman turned to a Vox unit on the pulpit that overlooked the bridge.
"The Gavascor stands ready, Lord,"
the commander of the 22nd chapter said. The companies of destroyers would be straining at the reins to bring their violence to the traitors. By the standards of Gilliman's legion, they were brutal, even under the moderating command of Iasis. He would be glad to unleash them today.
It will be our two ships, Gilliman said. The others are too far away to reach us in time.
So I presumed.
Forward's elements identified,
Nestor Lortinix at the Auspex Array Station called.
The lead ship is the battle barge De Profundis.
The grey-haired officer frowned.
I think, he said, there are anomalies.
There would be, Prato said. Trust your initial judgment, Lieutenant.
Word bearers, Gilliman breathed.
His right cheek twitched once.
Mort contacts, Lortinix said. Another squadron coming in below the ecliptic. 30 degrees to port. Elements of the 12th Legion, battle barges and strike cruisers closing at ramming speed.
To be expected, Gilliman said, dismissive.
The World Eaters wouldn't think of anything beyond a brute force attack.
The hololithic display of the Tacticarium table became populated with signals. Gilliman stared at the rune of the De Profundis, his fists clenched.
Take us at full speed into the vermin of the 17th.
The World Eaters won't expect recklessness from us, said Prato approvingly. And this will take the Samothrace and Cavascor out of the direct line of the attacks.
And tear the heart out of the word-bearers, Gilliman snarled.
Battleship and strike cruiser accelerated towards the word-bearers' formation. Gilliman watched through the oculus for the enemy to emerge from the ruin storm. He felt the rising power of the engines as an expression of the Samothrace's wrath. Then torpedoes slammed into the stern shields. The Crow had haunted the bowels of the Invincible Reason before. He had been the spectral shadow, a thing of darkness and talons, tearing apart any who hunted him. He had claimed an entire region of the capital ship as his own, taunting his brother by stealing what was his. It was fitting, then, the Lion thought, that Conrad Kurz should be deep in the night of the Reason once more. If he liked it so well, he should dwell in it. His domain was much smaller, though. It was a cell, isolated at the end of a long corridor, 200 feet from the rest of the prison. An iron chair sat against the left wall for the Lion's use. The chamber's ceiling was low, not much more than 10 feet above the deck. It was high enough, though. High enough to keep the night haunter suspended from the floor. Adamantium manacles, the length of his forearms, held him to the wall, his limbs outstretched. The Crow's wings were spread, but he would not fly. The door to the cell was 10 feet thick. The walls were twice that. The cell was a vault. The Crow was caged. There was nothing for him to haunt except memories. And yet he smiled when the Lion entered the cell. Black lips stretched over black teeth. His white flesh was the colour of drowned hope. His eyes were dark as rotten blood. They glittered with madness, with pain, and with amusement born of perfect despair.
"Do you really think it will be that easy?"
Kurz said. The Lion made a point of ignoring him. He walked past his brother and sat in the chair, judge and jailer, forcing Kurz to turn his head awkwardly to see him. Kurz did, still smiling.
"Do you?"
said Kurz. The Lion remained silent.
"You are not going to Terra,"
Kurz said. The ship jolted, struck by a series of huge waves in the immaterium. The Lion waited for the deck to settle, then finally spoke.
"You think not?"
He was not amusing himself. He was not here for petty reasons. He wanted to see what knowledge he could make Kurz let slip. The Night Haunter's vision was twisted, but he also saw further than any of his brothers. If the Lion could pass the lies from the hints, he might be left with fragments of the future to use in the struggle ahead. Kurz glanced up as if looking through the ceiling. He frowned slightly, touched by curiosity.
"My sense of wonder died long ago,"
he said,
"and there isn't much for me to wander about anymore. I know where everything leads. I know the truths you try to hide from yourself, brother. Even so, I wonder how you travel."
He paused. The grin became an insinuation.
"You do get around much more easily than Rubuti or poor suffering Sanguinius."
"I'm sure you have a point, Conrad."
Kurz could not shrug. Instead, he cocked his head to one side.
I just think this secret of yours is interesting. You are on a journey with it. Your destination will be fascinating.
My destination is Terra.
Did you come here just to willfully misunderstand me?
You claimed I would not reach Terra. I tell you that I will.
No. You are wrong.
The statement was unusually direct coming from Kurz.
I see, the lion said.
He permitted himself a small grim smile. He showed his mad brother his lack of concern.
You know this as an immutable fact, do you?
I do.
Then where are we arriving?
That would be telling, wouldn't it?
There was still the icy glint of mockery in those abyssal eyes. Mockery lashing out from the depths of the most profound anguish. But the lion caught Kurz's hesitation. It was tiny, a fragment of a second. It was real, though. Kurz's facial muscles contracted in a microscopic gesture. The change would have been invisible to anyone except the lion. He knew about secrets, how to keep them and how to detect them. He saw one now. The Night Haunter had just shown him uncertainty.
You don't know, the lion thought. There is something you aren't sure about, and that bothers you.
For a moment, the thought of Conrad's bloody conviction being shaken at all was satisfying. Then the emotion shaded into concern. Kurz rattled, however minutely, was an omen. The question was how to read it. The ship jolted again, this time with the hard shock of the translation to the materium. The lion forced down a grunt of surprise. This was too soon. He had not expected the jump to end now. His vox speed buzzed for his attention. Kurz laughed, his breath a fetid wheeze.
News!
He rasped.
News! Enlightenment is upon you, brother. Will you stay and share the moment with me?
I was not to be interrupted, the lion said to the vox.
Your pardon, my lord,
said Captain Stennius,
but your presence is needed on the bridge.
The urgency of the request lurked beneath its flat delivery. The lion stood.
On my way, he said.
At the entrance to the cell he paused and met Kurz's eyes.
I think you are curious, Conrad, he said.
Then he slammed the vault door behind him.
Have we arrived at Terra?
The lion asked Stennius as he marched towards the grav lift that would take him up to the bridge.
We have not.
Then where are we?
We don't know.
The identity of the Samothrace is confirmed, said Grell Kathnar.
The word-bearer bowed his head and returned to his station.
Will he be on board?
Fael Rabor asked Quor Vondor.
That is his flagship, the chaplain answered.
He'll be there.
His hand went to his belt and touched the hilt of the Athame. He saw Fael Rabor make the same gesture.
We are Nemesis, he thought.
Gilliman had not died on Kalth, because his death had been reserved for the two of them. They had earned the blessing through trial and through faith. The proof of the favour granted them sat on the transformed command throne of the De Profundis. The entire bridge had undergone a profound change. It was barely recognisable as the command deck of a battle barge. The walls and the oculus rippled like curtains. Curving columns radiated from the throne, crossing the floor and rising up the walls, partitioning the bridge as if it were gripped by a great talon. The claws were outlined by glowing fissures. The cracks extended through the entire length of the De Profundis. The Empyrean was pressing through, splitting the ship and holding it together. Below the throne, the workstations had become shifting sculptures. Their shapes were ornate, slowly waving flames. The silhouettes were laden with meaning. They were the manifestation of truths unutterable by human tongues. They were another form of the word, speaking truth to the real, eroding the illusions of the universe, each movement another razor wound opening the way to revelation. They could no longer be operated by unaltered mortals. Word-bearers were at the posts, at one with the lethal truths as they governed weapons systems and prepared attack vectors. but Kor Vondor recognized the actions as the dying echoes of the former being of the ship. The De Profundis would not attack as it once had. The oculus twitched. Streaks of light appeared, heading for the blue glint of the Samothrace. The World Eater's attack. Kor Vondor sniffed in contempt. The World Eaters were useful, but barbarians. The Night Lords, even now launching the rear assaults, were closer in their beings to the primordial truth, even though their faith was lacking. They had their uses, too.
The 13th and 12th Legions might finish him off before we get a chance,
Fael Rabor said.
They won't. There are only two Ultramarines vessels. Do you think Gilliman is going to die so easily?
No,
the captain admitted.
No,
Kor Vondor repeated.
Do your doubts come so easily?
I have none, said Fael Rabor.
Well, that is well.
There could be no more doubts. Not after Kalth. Not with Tok Derenoth sitting on the command throne. The unburdened turned his horned head to look at Kor Vondor, as if he had heard the chaplain's thoughts. The elongated jaws gaped in anticipation. Before his ascension, Tok Derenoth had been a mere legionary. Now Kor Vondor had to look at him as a wonder. The underworld war on Kalth had been raging for years before he and Fael Rabor had encountered Tok Derenoth. The ascended word-bearer had fought on since the destruction of Kurtha Sed, killing ultramarines without rest. But his transformation had also been a continuous evolution, an ever more complex fusion of the demonic and the human. He had communed more and more deeply with the gods, and he had gone deeper and deeper into the darkness of the planet. He had touched the Octed. He had learned. And in the end, through him, Kor Vondor and Fael Rabor had completed their penance too. They had brought their forces to the Octed in the purity of worship and devotion to chaos. They were present without thought of ambition or rivalries. The Octed tore open the Night of Stone and swallowed the devout. And in the warp, the Celebrant appeared. It was a being of the Immaterium, yet Kor Vondor had seen something of his own calling in it. The Celebrant was a chaplain, though of a kind and of an order far beyond anything human. The Celebrant brought them a mission. Kor Vondor still wondered if the mission was a sign that he and the others with them had purged the weakness of their failure, or if the Gauntlet of Kalth had instead been the proving ground. Perhaps it had been the fire through which he and Fael Rabor had been destined to walk, so they might reach this point, this moment, when at last they would unsheath the athames they had been given on Davin and drive them home. The spark of Gilliman's vessels grew brighter. The two ships became visible. They were rushing in as if eager for the doom awaiting them. The ships flashed.
Torpedo launches, Fael Rabor said. A sound strategy. Trying to break up our formation with a hard run. It would be, said Kor Vondor.
He looked at Tok Derenoth once more. The unburdened had withdrawn into himself. Shadows gathered around his monstrous form. He was feeding on the ritual performed by the faithful throughout the ship. His lidless eyes burned with the intensity of his concentration. He was the conduit of what was coming. His role was as precise as the one given to Kor Vondor and Fael Rabor. They would wield the blades. Tok Derenoth would bring them to Gilliman. The Unburdened had the power to do this because the De Profundis had also earned a gift from the Celebrant. It had been badly damaged in the battle over Kalth. It had limped out of the system and existed as a raider in the years that followed. Its injuries grew worse. More and more of its crew died, until at last it was a husk, its machine spirit raging impotently in the void. The warp had taken it at last, and its faithful service to the word was rewarded with this last mission. Kor Vondor had found himself aboard the battle barge in the midst of its transfiguration. In the midst of the changes, he had looked out between the gaps in the vessel's being. He had caught glimpses of the Intercessor, and of the vastness that brought its blessing to the De Profundis. That such things had being had brought him and Fael Rabor worshipfully to their knees. In these visions, The truth of the faith was confirmed. The sublimities were the agents of the word's fulfillment.
"The ultramarines are increasing speed and rate of fire," said Grell Kathnar.
A wave of torpedoes and missiles cut through the void towards the De Profundis. A warning klaxon sounded, its voice a moan that rose and fell. There was nothing machinic about the sound any longer, and the cry was one of celebration, not distress. Culmination was at hand.
"We are at the centre, and the head of our formation," Fel Rabor said. "He's right to target us."
"You mean he would be," Quor Vondor said. "If this ship and we were as we had once been."
He grinned. His jagged, curving incisors drew blood from his lips as they pulled back. Fael Rabor nodded.
"As you say, Chaplain. And he is behaving as you predicted."
"Rushing onto the point of our blades,"
he drew the athame. Fael Rabor followed his example.
"The moment is upon us."
"It is."
Quor Vondor gestured at the columns on the walls. The glow of the warp was blinding. The structure of the ship trembled. Tok Derenoth hissed. The unburden seemed to grow bulkier. The tendons of his arms, running along armour and flesh without distinction, were rigid and thick as chains. His monstrous head reared back in the ecstasy of his great work. He was the conduit for the force that held the De Profundis together and that was shaping its final attack. Quor Vondor and Fael Rabor moved to the fore of the elevated platform that held the command throne. Quor Vondor stood in the pulpit.
"Faithful of the word," he called,
and the legionaries below turned from their stations to look at him.
"Your mundane work is done," he said. "Now there is only glory. Prepare and bear witness to the glory of chaos. We go to kill a Primarch."
The word-bearers bowed as one, then turned to face the oculus. They took up bolters and chainswords. The bridge rang with the clank and growl of weapons being readied. The klaxons shrieked in a frenzy as the ultramarines' ordnance closed in. From aft, on all sides, the word-bearers fired back. The attack would not be enough to kill the battleship and the strike cruiser, but it would strain their void shields. The Night Lords maintained pressure from the rear, and Gilliman's ships were lit by the throbbing aura of flaring energy. The World Eater's squadron was altering the course of its run, having overshot the ultramarines. The ships were making their turns, slow as continents. Quor Vondor pictured the fury of the captains aboard, their cannons lashed out in anger, lines of fire cutting across the spirals of the ruined storm. The torpedoes hit. Tok Derenoth shouted with two voices. A demon laughed in triumph, and a human exulted in the joy of revelation. The De Profundis had no shields. It welcomed the impacts. They completed the ritual. Explosions blossomed on its bow and across the face of its superstructure. The bridge took a direct hit. The fissures blazed, ignited by the blast. Tok Derenoth reached forwards with both arms, his claws spread, lunging for prey. The fissures yawned wide. Quor Vondor roared, his voice drowned in the screaming thunder of the sundering of the De Profundis. The illusion of hull integrity vanished. The battle barge shrieked its last. Adamantium tore apart, conduits split and split again, filling disintegrating halls with streams of burning plasma. The engines raged, then fell silent in a blinding flare that incinerated the light cruiser Levana, which had strayed too close to destiny. The De Profundis screamed, and it screamed in victory. It streaked towards the Samothrace, its course as unalterable as prophecy. Its crew was dead, but the splinters were not mere shrapnel. They had coherent form. They were daggers. Inside, scores of them, word-bearers crouched, hurtling towards their prey. The physical self of the battle barge disintegrated, but its soul and its purpose did not. The one of the ship ceased to be. It transformed into legion. It became the undivided swarm.